Hello and welcome to Real Geeks Presents The B-Roll. I am Crash and Burn, and with me as always is Mike Montgomery.
Yo!
And sad, shitty, no good, rotten, really, really crappy news, Gilbert Gottfried, the greatest voice in America.
Yeah, frankly.
Has passed away at the age of a young 67, and I am as annoyed by this sudden passing that has just, like, in the last couple of months, we have lost a lot of comedians who are not very old.
No, they really aren't. And this one in particular, I think sudden is a very good word for it, because I just saw it pop up on Facebook and I was like, wait, what?
Yeah, and it was, so he passed April 12th at the age of 67 in Manhattan from ventricular tachycardia, complicated by type 2 myotonic dystrophy. So these are genetic ailments that just went, and there's not, like, it's the great tragedy of benign existence. You can't be angry at anything in particular. Nothing went wrong. It's just his body did a thing.
Yeah, no, it's very much one of those, this sucks.
Yeah.
But it was also just gonna happen.
It was gonna happen, but we could have gotten so much more out of him. Like, it's 67. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's not necessarily young, but you can still do amazing comedy. And he was still doing amazing comedy at 67.
Oh, no, he absolutely was. I know there was a video posted from Live at 5 from an interview that they did with him in 2004. And when I say interview, I use the term very loosely, because in the opening, Bruce Frisco accidentally pronounces his name wrong, and Gilbert Gottfried starts improvising for the entire segment.
Yeah, no, it's something to see. You should definitely check that out if you can. I think it's on Twitter, or it's on TikTok, it's probably on YouTube. But, he really took charge of that segment and completely fucked them. It was terrific.
Oh, no, yeah, it was wonderful, and I've seen people kind of responding to it, like, well, you know, I feel bad for Bruce and Star, or, well, Gilbert probably wasn't invited back after that. And from my perspective, it was like, those two reporters got absolute gold and didn't even really have to do anything.
Yeah, no, like, there is no doubt that they both consider that one of the greater interviews or segments they were ever involved in, simply because as someone who, you know, is a reporter and actually does do this kind of weird nonsense, gain the opportunity to talk to some celebrities who really know how to have some fun can just make your job, your entire day, just ever so damn splendid. Like, I had the chance, the luck, the honor to interview Brian Posehn years ago, back when he was actually writing Daredevil. And that was a delight of a conversation. When I interviewed Kenny and Spenny from Kenny versus Spenny, they actually, like, did a little performance back and forth in emails and phone messages just for me of their show. Nice. Where they're like, no, don't listen to Kenny. You know, he's such an asshole. And then Kenny would email me and be like, was Spenny talking to you? He's such a fucking little piss ass. And it wasn't stuff that was getting into the article. It was purely for my personal entertainment. And when you can get a performer who shows up to these kinds of interviews all the goddamn time to break and have a little fun, it's always classic gold. If you don't get one question that you were supposed to have answered, asked, but you get this dream of just beautiful charm, no one's going to be angry at you. Guaranteed that no one at that station was upset with Gilbert Gottfried. No. The only reason he didn't get invited back is I don't think he ever came back here.
Yeah.
It's Halifax. Yeah. No one comes here. If you came here, it's probably by mistake.
Oh, probably. And also, as you were sharing that story, this just occurred to me, and for the sake of comparison, do you remember that entertainment reporter in LA, I think it was, who in an interview accidentally mixed up Samuel L. Jackson with Lawrence Fishburne?
Oh, yes. That was quite cringe.
Yeah, I was just going to say, because that guy, like, you could tell, like, Sam Jackson is just tearing into him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also funny improv, but at the same time, you could tell that this reporter just wanted to crawl under his desk and die.
Oh, absolutely. Like, there are times when it backfires in that sense, when you become the subject which they are riffing on. But guaranteed, for good or ill, that is definitely in his sizzle reel and at the top of the Google responses to searching his name. And, you know, in the land of clicks, whoever has the most is king. Doesn't matter why.
But basically, yeah. And, like, the simple fact is that compared to that, Bruce and Star in that segment are clearly just having the time of their lives.
Well, I mean, the fact that they're essentially choking on laughter is possibly an indication.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Another segment that I ended up stumbling across on Twitter is the You Fool segment from Hollywood Squares back in 1999.
Oh, yeah.
Where the only square left on the board is Gilbert Gottfried's, and he decides he's just going to fuck with everyone.
I want to claim that I watched that on its original broadcast, because for some ungodly reason, I used to, as a young teenager, watch an awful lot of network television, specifically anything that was like on CTV and ASN. And I watched an absurd amount of that specific iteration of Hollywood Squares. And I remember that clip. I didn't even have to like rewatch it. It's just, no, I remember that. That was beautiful. That was like the true potential of what those kinds of idiotic shows can be.
Oh, no. I had watched Hollywood Squares pretty much religiously around that time period as well. I mean, I couldn't tell you for sure now, but I may have seen it when it aired.
Yeah. I mean, like, that's the thing. But they mostly all blended together. It's Hollywood fucking Squares. But
yeah, but it's just such a masterclass of comedy, like, especially how by the end of it, like, every celebrity on there is just getting in on it.
Yeah, that was, like, there are sometimes when everything just gels and you can't reproduce that. I know for a fact that when they shoot these kinds of shows, everyone is getting hammered, and typically you can tell, eventually if you watch enough, you can tell the sober episodes that they shot early in the day and the, oh, wow, is that really going to air? Episodes that happen at the end. You know, the heavy lunch does nothing when you drink a quart of gin. So I would say that was definitely a late in the day episode, possibly even late in the season. So everyone's really just letting it go. Like, this is full on drunk as shit laughing at each other. And, you know, it's the kind of love that you can feel through network cheap ass, very low budget television that just doesn't quite translate even in the golden age of television. That's right. I demand that my creatives be shithouse wasted far more often.
I mean, let's be honest. 9 times out of 10, the best stuff you get probably came from the drunk shows. I mean, like, I don't make the rules, but here we are. I think the only thing other thing to note would be just how easily the most unique voice in comedy in multiple ways, and oddly also probably most known for voicing birds.
Yeah,
if you really think about it.
It's one of his great contradictions, I believe. Someone once put it as, he's incredibly filthy in his stand-up act, but he plays an awful lot of villains and birds and other animals in children's cartoons, not just Disney's Aladdin, but many, many shows. I mean, because his voice is so recognizable, it just makes for fantastic voiceover work, but holy crap. It's the Bob Saget syndrome all over again.
Yeah,
well,
yeah,
Bob Saget, Louis Armstrong, from that whole generation of people who started in like the 70s and the 80s were just outhouse filthy. Filthy. And somehow all ended up in family sitcoms and like cartoon shows and Disney.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sign me up for that pipeline. I want the Tim Allen, you know, cocaine to Disney pipeline. I want whatever it is that allowed Bob Saget to make a deal with the devil to go from telling jokes about sucking as many dicks as you can in under an hour to being syndicated as America's father. I want that. I don't care if I die young. I want that.
And especially the way Saget could go back and forth between those two things so effortlessly that it was almost like nobody really noticed.
There is absolutely enough footage out there in the world, hidden in a vault somewhere, of him on set blowing takes by being just absolutely savage. Not when the kids are around, of course, or whatever.
Of course, yeah.
But absolutely savage. And so I feel that at some point, if they know what's good for their profit line, they will release a completely filthy, unaired season of Full House. Where it's like, here's an episode that you know, but fucked. Bob Saget fucked it. Literally, with his dick.
That is, honest to God, the only version of Full House at this point that I would willingly watch. Because, like, this is coming from someone who did thoroughly enjoy it back in the day. But then, as I got older, I rewatched a few episodes at a friend's place one day. And I was accurately predicting every single joke. I knew every Dave Coulier impression when it was coming.
Mm.
Like, I could just predict everything.
It kind of pieces itself together like a Happy Meal. You can have...
Yeah.
Some variation, but more or less you're still getting a Happy Meal. There's only so much that you can choose from. It's like once you figure out the formula to something absolutely banal, like shit. One second. I'm so happy I've purged the name from my memory. Oh, that's amazing. The Big Bang Theory.
No, I don't blame you for purging that one.
I
find the Big Bang Theory offensive.
It's absolutely offensive. It's nerd humor that isn't nerd humor at all. It's simply going nerd and then laughing. And once you realize its structure, it's not actually making references. It's just following this really basic thing where it's like plug and play based on genre. You can just predict to within maybe like one or two choices literally every single line of dialogue, and that transfers to the other Laurie shows. and then you can't watch television during prime time anymore.
But I think also one final note with Gilbert Gottfried would be, if nothing else, if you haven't, you need to check out what may be the most natural and effortless comedy ever done, which is Gilbert Gottfried reading 50 Shades of Grey.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that is a modern-day classic. Like, I'm serious. That is possibly one of the greatest couple of minutes you can ever spend in your entire life. And it's possibly the greatest thing to have ever come out of that book series. Because there ain't much else.
Well, yeah. Well, I think with that, I would say Gilbert Gottfried reading it at number one, and probably George Takei reading it at number two.
Yeah, no, I can see that. My problem with George Takei reading it is he actually imbues it with a vague sense of sensuality, and that's playing its game. You don't want to play its game. You want to completely remove any sense of sexual attraction whatsoever. And well, if you want that, you go with Gilbert.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say that Takei has to imbue it with a gimmick of some sort, whether or not it's working in, oh my,
yeah,
wherever he can. But Gottfried has the advantage because he didn't have, all he had to do was sit there and read.
Yeah.
Keep still, he orders, and slowly he inserts his thumb inside me, rotating it around and around, stroking the front wall of my vagina. No fisting, you say?
Fantastic news. Fantastic Beasts has been put on hold. As Warner Brothers has shifted with their merger / purchase by Discovery into Warner Discovery, Discover Warner, Warner Discover Bros, whatever the hell they end up fully calling that, they're taking a good look at their projects. And one project that seems to be perpetually doomed in a couple of different interesting ways is is the Harry Potter sequel random series. I don't know if they ever gave a number as to what it was originally supposed to run for. Fantastic Beasts 5. So it was supposed to go to 5?
It was originally supposed to be 5, and
it may not make it past 4.
It right now, and I asked you if that was official specifically because a certain, shall we say, tiny alien roommate of mine last night on Twitter called out a Harry Potter news service for posting a article from Variety and claiming that Fantastic Beasts was officially done, even though nowhere in the article doesn't actually say that.
Oh, no, it's not necessarily, it's like paused. They're giving consideration based on box office that will occur tomorrow when it is released, and from there determine if they want to flush any more money down the drain, because this was supposed to be one of their primary big tent productions. This was supposed to bring everyone in, just like, well, I guess Lord of the Rings was supposed to, but kind of crapped out because those last three movies weren't very good. And, of course, Star Wars eventually did for Disney. This is supposed to be their, like, big epic fantasy thing where they can do whatever they want. And it's kind of just been fizzling out in one or two ways. The first, of course, and we'll save the big one for the last, but the first, of course, being the constant recasting of the primary villain around which the series centers.
Yep.
Which, an interesting tactic, considering, you know, ooh, he's magic, ooh. Not really good for laying down a solid chronological, like, timeline. Like, it's very James Bond, as in, like, Blofeld.
Yeah, oh, yeah, it's very James Bond.
But I don't think it's that smart to actually like wink and nod and like have him holding a white cat one day. And like, it's like, oh, okay. So you're explaining it away as in he's changing his identity to say they're really kind of just, I know that they will explain it away. There will be a reason, but it's hard to commit to any kind of character when every single time you see the character, he's not only performed completely differently, but like everything about him is different. He's practically Doctor Who. He's a Time Lord. And sometimes he's a dick with a flair. Sometimes he's a dick with no flair. Sometimes he's Mads Mikkelsen.
And you also, just to add to that, there's also properties like, remember the Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus?
Yes. That was not good.
Your lead has died. So they did essentially the same gimmick as here of recasting the main character multiple times.
Yeah.
But whether you loved or hated that movie, it had the advantage of sympathy, basically, where like people knew that Colin Farrell and I think Jude Law and a couple other people that I'm forgetting all came in because they were friends with Heath Ledger and wanted to finish the film in his honor.
Yeah, and it made sense as kind of a tribute piece. The script had to be adapted. It wasn't properly adapted, so none of it really made sense, but you weren't watching a film for a story. You were more or less watching a eulogy. And that's why no one watches that film anymore, because no one wants to watch the Heath Ledger eulogy.
I mean, yeah, really, not wrong.
However, this series has no such sympathy or belovedness with the audience. People are already saying that the new film sucks total ass, and practically no one is calling for the series to be concluded. Like, it usually, when there is a visceral reaction to something that has a massive fan base, that massive fan base becomes very invigorated and militant and starts hashtag bombing people and then threatening them. Looking at you, random Snyder assholes. And I don't see any of that here. Maybe because people who still support this genre are busy hating other people for other reasons, which is odd to think. We're still not there yet. But problem number two, Ezra Miller.
Oof.
Yup.
I honestly thought Ezra Miller was going to be the last thing you went to because they are a problem for Warner Brothers on multiple levels.
They are. As we covered before, Ezra is operating in a very unexpected way for someone who has the potential for multiple long-running franchises, more or less based around or certainly centering them in a main, like, core cast way. And they are burning every bridge that they possibly can.
To go back to what you were discussing at the start of this segment and Warner Brothers' tentpole franchises, Ezra Miller is in both of them.
Both of them. And I could definitely see that if they decided to turn like something like The Matrix into another franchise, which they have threatened to do, bringing Ezra Miller into, or at least I could have seen bringing Ezra Miller into that. Now, No. Not happening.
I mean, even the way Warner Brothers tends to drag their feet on anything even remotely scandalous, the fact that they're already at the point of maybe we should drop them is kind, in its own way, kind of impressive.
Yeah, and allowing that to leak during the opening of one of their films and one of Warner Brothers' supposed to be main blockbuster features. I think at this point, someone that has been brought into Warner Brothers from Discovery has decided enough of this shit. And we are going to tank this. We're going to let it make as much money as it can. But we essentially see this as a zombie property. It is dead. And it should just die, be buried, and allow to be forgotten for a little while so that then they can come in with some new creative genius and revive the IP.
Oh yeah.
And there's two places I want to take that. And damn it, I just segued into both of them, but they are two different stories. So I'm going to hit one first and then the other.
Cool.
Because that's how chronological storytelling works. The first problem, of course, and the final problem of our series of three problems behind this movie series, the Fantastic Beasts movie series, is, of course, J.K. fucking Rowling. She has completely tanked her own career and the IP, to which Warner Brothers, who cannot control her, much like Elon Musk's companies, must look in horror at his constant tweeting and mouthing off.
Yeah.
And I am certain that Warner Brothers Discovery did not go into this deal so that they could play babysitter to a woman who has too much money to be acting like a foolish child. Especially when it comes to their money, which they hope to be making a lot more of. So you'll likely see them sever any business connection they have with her that doesn't involve essentially sending royalty checks.
Yeah, I was just going to say, if they're going to salvage anything Harry Potter related at this point, because I know that even if they drop Fantastic Beasts, there's still things like the Harry Potter stage play, whose name eludes me, that's set essentially after the last movie.
The something child, the forgotten child. No, that's... See, they all sound like Doctor Who titles anyway, so...
Yeah, you're not wrong.
The timeless child, the forgotten child, the wandering child. I don't know. The transgender child. But that, of course, then leads into looking at... So they're going to want to pull in people who can Kevin Feige a situation. You drop a Kevin Feige in, everything gets good. Everything runs. All the trains are on time. And you get a kind of a vision, a strong, steady hand that can lead a franchise through its many bumps that will come. And I want to say that they're doing this or envision to do this with the Harry Potter wizarding stuff eventually, because it is reportedly what they're looking to do with the DCEU, which is, of course, five different jigsaw puzzles thrown together into a Monopoly box that doesn't have any money in it. Have fun, kids.
Yeah, I was gonna say, in all manner, are they trying to take a hammer to that puzzle to get it together?
Yeah, they're trying.
For the love of God, get it together.
Yeah, they are trying their best because they think that is a roadmap and not just a bunch of horribly mangled puzzle pieces made of cardboard. So reports are saying that they are looking for someone who has a vision of being able to unite kind of a universe in a temple way, but also create a lot of innovative works like Joker. And those are two contradictory thoughts. So once again, Warner Brothers doesn't know what the fuck it wants. Hooray.
Yeah, sounds about right.
They, of course, have some answers, probably front and center, that they could go with. Namely, they could raise the leaders of DC's vaunted and much awarded animation studios to lead some of these projects, since literally no one at Warner Brothers seems to understand DC characters except the animation side.
Frankly, yeah, like, I've never heard a DC fan who has common sense not at some point ask, why are they not just letting the animation people do it?
Yeah, because, and I mean, you know, 30 years of award-winning, profitable experience that was groundbreaking and character-defining. No, let's ignore that. Hey, what's J.J. Abrams doing these days? Let's get J.J. Abrams to do this.
Dave Filoni and Star Wars.
Yep.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, no, it's really, really simple. Get the geeks that have worked on this stuff for years for you to do it. Don't get random geeks, because random geeks don't know how to keep the storylines and the worlds coherent. They'll just kind of fall off on their own little geek freak passage. Get someone who has tirelessly had to work within the constraints of the established canon and lore, and actually knows the characters because they talk to the writers of these characters, or they have written them themselves. Find your cartoon writers, find your comic book writers. These are the people who have to pump out a ridiculous amount of imaginative content that must remain canonical lest the fans tear them to shreds, and give them the money, give them the power and studio control. Just do that. Do that thing that people have been saying to do for 40 fucking years.
Yeah, again, the fact is, this should not be this hard.
No.
And yet, here we are.
In fact, the answer should have been learned back with Tim Burton's Batman. Because while Tim Burton was not a Batman nerd, he was an animator. Maybe that was the lesson that should have been learned. Give it to your animators. They'll understand how to keep this stuff from looking silly. Don't give it to people who, like, try to make macho bullshit and are afraid of tights. Give it to the person who is like, yeah, they wear tights. What about it? We have to make sure that that looks really cool, and we will, because we're animators, and we can make the most goddamn ridiculous nonsense look breathtaking.
At the very least, just please give it to someone who is not afraid of color.
Please, color grading.
Please.
It's just
bare minimum.
I would love to see the color blue in something lighter than midnight. Thank you.
More from the DC Universe, specifically the upcoming Blue Beetle film, where they've apparently had to recast the main villain. Sharon Stone was originally supposed to play Victoria Cord, a new character who was apparently created specifically for this movie. And she has had to pull out because reasons.
The best one.
Reasons. And I don't think the article actually says why she had to pull out. But according to slashfilm.com, coming in to replace her will be Susan Sarandon.
Yeah. So.
Which.
Well, that's...
I'm down to this.
Yeah. No, I... Susan Sarandon has always been very good on screen. She can be less interesting off screen, but I'm interested in this. I forgot that this was in production. I'm happy that they're continuing production and not just scrapping everything that hasn't already been produced at Warner Brothers. Making the character a Cord, that's curious. I don't really know much about Blue Beetle, except I know the Ted Kord Blue Beetle, mainly because, Booster Gold,
yeah,
and Blue Beetle are the greatest pairing ever, and I am a massive fan of Justice League International, and therefore I am fully aware of this different version of the character that has been around for about 20 years at this point, possibly a little bit longer. I don't know much about him. I know there's something about a magical or space-faring beetle that is on his back.
That is the current version of the Blue Beetle, Jaime Reyes, who most people will probably know, if not from the comics, then most likely the Young Justice animated series. And it looks like that's the version that they're going with.
I mean, I assume that's the one they're going with. It's the most toyetic. Yeah. It's the most well-known with movie-going generations and young kids at this point, because no one is watching Ted Kord leap around in tights with Booster Gold just yucking it up behind him. That it's not how most people know this character. It's how old nerds like me know this character, and yeah. Even I would say you should probably make the new version since he has actual powers and isn't just, you know, not fat Dan Dreiberg.
And at this point, if you want Booster Gold on the screen, then you're going to want to start watching Legends of Tomorrow.
Yes, and you should, because that is a fantastic performance, which of course leads to please cast Zach Braff as Ted Kord. Please.
Ooh.
Please. We need to have those two back together.
I mean, that and, first and foremost, please renew Legends of Tomorrow.
Oh, of course. Please renew. Hashtag please renew, or hashtag renew Legends of Tomorrow. It is a wacky show that does everything spur of the moment and off the top of its head, and when it is bad, it is very cheesy. But when it is good, it is oh so chaotic.
To go into semi-comic book news, with the way the casting is going on this movie, there's apparently a rule where if you have one comic book movie, at some point you're going to get what might as well be a second comic book franchise. Because Brie Larson has recently been announced as joining the cast of Fast and Furious 10, which, let's be honest, is basically a comic book movie.
Yes. At this point, I treat any casting news from that series as, of course. Of course. Everyone will eventually be in these films if they run long enough. Every single actor of note, be it dramatic, action, romantic, or comedic, will eventually end up in a Fast and the Furious movie. And here's the kicker. Every single one of them are going to be just chef's kiss bullshit nonsense great.
Oh, yeah. And there's something also with this franchise. Robert Downey Jr. was announced as being in it in Fast 10 at one point. I haven't seen anything on that in a long-ass time, so I don't know what happened there.
I presume that there will be, like, some sort of cameo, and that's the way he'll roll for probably the next 5 to 10 years of his life. That man doesn't need to work again. Ever.
No, that's very true. But also having been announced for this movie were Jason Momoa and Daniela Melchior. I probably mispronounced that, but best I could do, who have both worked in DCEU. And then we have
Gal Gadot. I want to just correct you on that. When citing Jason Momoa, one does not say has worked in the DCEU. One says as featured on Stargate Atlantis. Thank you.
I could have also said has worked mostly shirtless in the DCEU, and I feel like in its own way that is just as acceptable.
I don't think you need to add in the DCEU to that.
That's okay, valid point. But Just to add to that list is the people who are already in the franchise at some point, specifically Gal Gadot, John Cena, Kurt Russell, Michael Rooker, Idris Elba, and Jimon Hounsou, who have all already done either Marvel or DC properties.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Plus, of course, it is more or less, let's say, founded by Vin Diesel, voice of Groot.
Yep.
Who feuded legendarily during productions with The Rock, Black Adam. It's a clusterfuck. It is a cluster. Fuck. And at this point, my only question is, when does Luda get to be in the MCU?
We're going to go back to Turning Red one more time, where it's been reported that Domi Shi has been named Vice President of Creative at Pixar, joining directors Andrew Stanton, Peter Sullen, and Dan Scanlon in guiding the studio's filmmakers on their own productions as part of the famed Pixar Brain Trust. So to Domi Shi, I of course say congratulations. And to the Christian conservative haters, once again, go fuck yourselves.
Yeah, I guess that worked out well for her.
Oh, yeah.
Shit. congratulations to her. That's fantastic. Can't wait to see what comes out of that collaborative effort. And
And
fuck the haters.
Yeah, and like from Turning Red alone, it's absolutely well-earned. You know the commonly held belief that Hollywood is extremely desperate for ideas, and B, you can apparently put a Spirit Halloween store anywhere?
Yep.
Those ideas are now being merged into one, as, according to Variety, the Spirit Halloween store film is now in the works, starring Christopher Lloyd and Rachel Lee Cook. So clearly this is going to get a blockbuster release.
I truly hope that this becomes a clusterfuck of unprecedented measures. I want to see this in theaters, good, bad. I just want it to be just an absolute cheesy shit show. Essentially made to defraud a studio, much like many Spirit Halloweens are to those who rent out their spaces.
Well, you may get your wish because...
Yay!
Here's the description of the plot. Tell me if anything here sounds at all familiar. When a new Spirit Halloween store appears in a deserted strip mall, three middle school friends who think they've outgrown trick-or-treating make a dare to spend the night locked inside the store Halloween night. But they soon find out that the store is haunted by an angry evil spirit who has possessed the creepy animatronic characters. The kids embark on a thrilling and spooky adventure in order to survive the night and avoid becoming possessed themselves.
I would love for them to give this about the budget and production value of a mid-90s Nickelodeon live-action film. I want Dutch Angles into, like, Are You Afraid of the Dark style, yeah. like lighting and shots. I want pure cheese. If you're going to make a movie about Spirit Halloween, focusing on or set in Spirit Halloween, you should be able to recreate that movie with anything purchased from Spirit Halloween. That should be its main draw. Yes. The entire film is a catalog. Here is the kind of movie we can make entirely with things from Spirit Halloween, and they are not allowed to deviate from that.
Also, in terms of casting news that could have been, see if you can picture this. Mr. and Mrs. Smith, starring Brad Pitt and Gwen Stefani.
I don't like it. I don't like it. Yeah. No, that doesn't work. And it's not just because, like, they weren't dating or any of that nonsense. I think she didn't have the gravitas that you get from Angelina Jolie. And that role required a kind of, like, quiet gravitas.
Yeah. And, well, apparently Gwen Stefani was on the Ellen DeGeneres show where she was asked about, like, movies she had auditioned for but lost out on them. People were surprised to hear. And Stefani answered, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, Angelina beat me. It probably wasn't that much of an actual contest, but...
Yeah, I know I watched that movie, but it never made any impression. It seemed to have made an impression with other people for some reason. But not with me. I never really cared. It, for some reason, I always consider it in my mind the same level as X versus Sever. And I know it's better than X versus Sever because that was an absolute pile of trash. But it's the same thing to me. Well, that's neat.
Yeah, no, it's just that this is something where the worst case scenario, Brad Pitt would have broken up a marriage and a ska band.
Moon Knight Episode 3, we're finally in Egypt, and oh no, he has been depowered. That's right, we're in the middle of the show, and therefore our superhero has to have a tragic loss of any powers. It's like the early 2000s again. Remember Spider-Man 2? Hey kids, remember Spider-Man 2?
Yeah, and I think this is also the start of, if you've been watching the show and going, when does this become Indiana Jones?
Oh, it definitely did.
There you go.
Yeah.
It's right here.
This is an episode of more or less Indiana Jones references, plus some sweet ass, I forgot the name of that Egyptian writing and stick technique, but it's apparently a cultural mainstay. It just looked really cool and really brutal. And oh my god, how much would it hurt to get stabbed repeatedly with giant spears? No thank you. No thank you.
Well, apparently if you're Mark Spector and you're in the suit, not at all.
Yeah, no, I kind of liked how they dropped into that just for a comedic moment. Not kind of like spending too much time in that suit, not overplaying the hand of the comedy of having Steven be the one fighting. And of course, bringing in a third character. A personality that takes control when shit goes to true fuck. And you need someone who will deal with the wet work.
Yeah, and the nice thing is you don't yet know who that third personality actually is.
No. And while I guess fans of the character know that is this third version, this cab driver, I believe. I don't know anything about it. I understand he's more gruff and tumble and clearly is more absolutely vicious. His name is Jake Lockley.
Yeah.
As someone who doesn't know enough about this character, I'm full on and still locked in. I want more. More. Yes.
Oh, yeah. No. So do I. And the idea of this mystery personality being Lockley, I'm kind of going a cab driver who's more brutal and vicious than a trained mercenary. On the surface, that sounds odd.
Until you understand what cabbies have to sometimes put up with.
Fair.
And then maybe he's the most brutal one of us all. Now, I suspect it'll be like something like, well, he's less a cab driver and more like,
yeah,
a fix-it or delivery guy, someone that you call to because he knows how to do shit. You know, you don't talk about him in good public. Wink, wink.
While you're talking, I was on IMDb trivia trying to find the name of the Horus and Spira thing. And actually, do you remember the story about the Moon Knight actor who had passed away, like, I think a month or two back?
Oh, yes, yeah.
That was actually Gaspard Ulliel, who played Anton Mogart in this episode.
Oh, yeah, and apparently, like, Mogart is Moon Knight's typically arch-villain, or his nemesis, and this episode probably would have meant, like, ooh, big things to come for later on, and now is just kind of, like, a memorial to a fantastic actor. He gives a great performance, and...
Oh, yeah.
I didn't even know, like, going in who had passed in terms of like their role in the show, and it's a real shame. You see someone who it's like, wow, you've got a lot of potential, and also you're pretty damn good looking. Oh
yeah no I didn't realize it either. I only caught it because the last entry on the trivia for the episode specifically says that the episode is dedicated to him. Because Moon Knight was the last project that he had finished filming.
Yeah. Do you know what did he pass away from? I can't recall. It was like news that I was like vaguely aware of, because once again, it's like Moon Knight. Okay.
I'm checking his listing now. I'm going to see if I can find it. For the moment, don't quote me on this, it might have been a skiing accident.
Ski accident in January, yep.
Okay.
Well, that's very sad and tragic. We also get to see the Ennead, well, at least some of them, and their avatars, yeah, this episode. When Khonshu and Mark/Steven are pulled before them to be judged, as they judge Harrow and Aminet, or accuse Harrow and Aminet in front of the Ennead of their plot, and of course everything goes to shit as Harrow turns Mark and Steven's psychological issues against Khonshu and Mark/Steven, and by the end of it, they kind of get told to piss off. Also, who the hell is that chick? That ain't Black Panther. Unless it is. Ooh.
Yeah, no, I was actually just going to say the Bastet isn't even mentioned.
But she's there.
No, if we're thinking of the same person, she was the avatar for a different god.
Was it? That was a Black Panther statue in front of her, though. Like, didn't that represent the god that they were?
That I don't know, but I know at the start of the scene, they list the avatars that are there and the gods they represent. Bastet's name is not mentioned.
Interesting.
Well, I've got to figure, it's one of those things where there are moments in a show where you're looking at it through a story lens, but you also have to stop and look at it through the more practical lens.
And yeah, like I can completely understand, you know, you have to service the story that you're in first, not like the reference material. But I almost figured that this was going to be their great way of like giving a hint of what's happening over in the production of Wakanda Lives. And kind of like, they could say, oh, well, this person represents the spirit of Bastet, but they're not the Black Panther. And it's like, oh, okay, has that, maybe those duties have been separated. I was expecting them to use it at least to kind of like suggest what was happening in Wakanda.
Well, I mean, I think they could have done that. I think the only thing there is I could see a scenario where they're going, we know that if we put someone in that role and have them there just as representative Bastet, fans will just assume that that person is going to be the Black Panther.
Mm.
And they clearly don't want to tip their hand.
Now, yeah, and it would, like, it could have easily have just been like, you are not King T'Challa, and it'd be like, you are very observant. You know, you are not the Black Panther. No, I am the Avatar. And it's like, that makes no sense. And then we move in, you know, yeah. Like that could, anyway, I'm interested in seeing what they decide to do instead, since they clearly are not dipping any hand. Maybe the Ennead is kind of intentionally supposed to be kept separate so that you don't kind of reluctantly undermine the mythology of Wakanda. You know, if it turns out the Ennead are just aliens, and it's like, ooh, then it's like, okay, so what makes Wakanda so special? Shit. Okay, no, wait, shit. Rewrite. Yeah, no, yeah. Wait, go back. We didn't say anything. You know, it's like, oh, okay, that, yeah. I could see them trying to, like, protect the IP and the gravitas that they've given Wakanda, as opposed to, say, you know, the other avatars of the Ennead who don't seem to be as accomplished. Yeah.
Yeah, no, fair. My problem with that scene was more, apparently the Ennead are kind of morons.
Oh yeah.
Because yeah. they believed everything that Arthur Harrow said so, and just took his side so quickly. But at the same time, and this is an absolute credit to the show, I'm also going, there's ways that this could still play out that would 1,000% work.
Oh yeah, no, they, like, it's not that it's gone bad, it's more like they've done a great job of writing Harrow and, of course, Ethan Hawke's performance to give a dick performance that you could definitely see, like, oh, from the right perspective, you're just caring and just trying to make sure everything's fine. And it's like, but from any knowing perspective, you're a complete asshole and the villain. And yeah. So just by keeping a few key details from certain people, you can completely change someone. And it's really interesting. A lot of people have been comparing him to, like, Putin, where you say one thing and do the other. And you do it in such a way that you're essentially reassuring while, of course, you know, screwing someone over. I thought that was really well done. And I kind of like the effect. I mean, obviously, love the sky turning back effects. Those were really cool. Oh, no, cool,
that was wonderful.
How do you explain that one to the normies?
Yeah, I can totally see people going, well, if that's happening all around the world, why are the Avengers not looking into that?
Yeah.
To which I would say, who the hell cares?
Yeah, I would say that kind of stuff is kind of, like, localized. It's sure, in Cairo it's doing it, but if you go into, like, Libya, this guy's probably not doing much shit, you know? By the time you hit Iran, everything's fine.
Oh, true. And, number one, also, there's this was the more Mark-heavy episode that I was kind of hoping for.
Yes, it was very nice to see the more action-oriented, the more, like active force moving, and then have Steven seemingly being a disruptive force, and then, ooh, third force, ooh, who's actually killing these people? Ooh, questions.
Also, credit to Oscar Isaac for his work, especially his transitions between Mark and Steven, because this is the first time where, instead of just seeing kind of the aftermath of that switch, we get to see the actual switch, and it's so smooth and seamless.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
It was really well done. I love the way that they're addressing it. They're not overplaying it. They're not overthinking it. It's just a fun little camera effect, and it's entertaining to watch, but it's not overly dramatic. It doesn't take too long. It's just, okay, one and done, and move on to the next thing. It's fantastic. Khonshu has been locked into a statue. I love the little like way that it was kind of fashioned magically out of the stone pillar.
Yeah, yeah.
And then locks him into this form in the temple. And it was said that there are others in the temple, and apparently there's something like 8 or 9 Ennead traditionally, but only 5 were present. Ooh, where are the others? They're in statues. These assholes have been essentially just locking people away when they become problematic over the eons, millennia, however long this nonsense has been going on. And I just really like that effect. It was cool. It was a neat way of doing it. I think it was kind of semi-referential to the blocks in Fifth Element, when you put the element on them and then like a little thing would move.
Yeah, no, that could very well be.
Because they're both stone pillars in Egypt. Yeah, I found the one thing that connects these two ideas. The most obvious trait they have. But yeah, I'm excited for more episodes of Moon Knight.
Oh yeah, so am I. Especially for May Kalamaui as Layla, who is very much forging a new character that I am dying to get to know. Specifically with the opening sequence with the Forger, where the way the two of them were interacting, I'm just waiting to find out that the Forger is Layla's mother.
Or, yeah, like Layla's far more intricate to the story, which is also suggested when Harrow's like, ooh, he's got secrets, he's not telling you. And from what I read, apparently Mark was probably responsible for the death of her father. But she don't know that, and Mark doesn't want to tell her. So, see where that goes.
Well, I mean, you could be right. I'm kind of hoping it's not that, just because we did see something similar to that in Hawkeye.
Yeah, we did see something. Well, yeah, we saw something practically directly similar to that. But I think in Hawkeye, it was the Kingpin pretending that, like, oh, it was only Hawkeye who killed, only Hawkeye. This is more like, no, I'm responsible, yeah. But I didn't mean to be there. Hawkeye was 100% responsible, and he meant to do it, but it was manipulated. The whole situation existed because of manipulation. Maybe Khonshu's the kingpin of this. He seems to be more like, in this regard, I don't think he's the big bad villain, the secret villain of this. I don't think he has his shit together enough. I think next season he will be, when he finally gets his shit together. This is him preparing.
Yeah, no doubt. And if that is the theory about what Mark is hiding from Layla, like I said, I hope it's not that. But if it is, I have the utmost faith that the writers will make it work. So I would not be disappointed either way.
Yeah. Yeah, I have pretty decent faith in Marvel's creative team. I have learned that over the last 14 years.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my, yeah, yeah. Oh no, that's the 14.
Also, at the meeting with Anton, Layla's, for lack of a better term, necklace that, If you go back to the mention of the previous episode, that she would essentially be the Moon Knight after Mark.
And she's already wearing Moon Knight-y weaponry jewelry? Yeah.
That she draws out essentially the same way that Mark draws his blades.
I think, yeah, she's much more tied to the fundamental backstory of this than they are letting on. Mark was probably just in the way, and she was always going to become the Moon Knight or something like that. Something. He is the interloper in her story. At the end of this, we're going to realize it was never really about him.
That could very well be, because Oscar Isaac has only signed on for the one season. He's not signed long term.
Which is a really fascinating move for Disney, but then again, I think they have his number if they need him.
Oh, no, it could very well be the simple fact that after Star Wars, they were basically going, look, we're sorry, whatever we need to do.
I think he'll be back for more. I just think that they're trying to offer him a way of, like, exiting if he felt like this went tits up as well.
Or it could simply be that if he can't sign on for a season two for whatever reason, they may be building Layla as a backup.
It's a smart thing to do.
Yeah, no, it absolutely is. And I'm 1,000% okay with it.
Yeah, I'd watch that. You know, I'm still interested in the last three episodes of this season, but I'll watch that too, damn it. I'll watch it all.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you so much for listening. This has been Real Geeks Presents The B-Roll. I have been Crash and Burn. You have been Mike Montgomery. Like, share, and subscribe. And don't forget to check us out on YouTube at Geeks vs. Nerds.
Please feel free to drop us a line at realgeeksHFX@gmail.com with any questions, comments, input, insults, recipes, home improvement tips. We seriously don't care.
Etc. Potpourri. Anything else to say this week, Mike?
Join us, well, from this episode, probably in a few days, when I have to torture myself with Sonic 2.
It's not as bad as you think. It's not as good as you think, but it's not as bad as you think. Join us! See you later!
Bye.